On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Here we go.
Whatever.
Here we go, watch out. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam. What a beautiful day. Not. What a wonderful life. Not. We're all happy. Not. Not. All right, I'm retitling this show. The show is not the Ron Van Dam Show today. It's the I'm Pissed and I'm Just Angry at Everybody Show today. This is day number 732 of snowstorms in the Northeast, in the New England area from whence we podcast. Some of you listen to this show throughout the country. Don't you dare even go there. For those that live in New England, this is just crazy, crazy crap. It has snowed every day since 1927. It has snowed past 3 weeks almost every day, and everybody in New England is just pretty much sick of it. Even people that love skiing are saying, I don't want to ski anymore. I'm sick of skiing. I'm sick of snow. Everybody's sick of snow. No, say snow. Everybody says now. Everybody's sick of snow. So we're digging out of a snowstorm that we had for the past almost 3 days on this particular date, which is February 10th today, at the date of this podcast origination. More snow is expected in about 2 days from now. Another 4 to 6 inches. And then over the weekend, another 17 feet. It doesn't even matter anymore. All right, let's go right to the forecast. This is a new feature that we have. We're doing the forecast because it's just so horrible. And by the way, if there are any children in the room, get them out of the room because this is going to be a very nasty show today because I'm just like pissed. All right, let's go to our 5-day forecast with meteorologist Jim Clambaker.
Hey, this is Jim Clambaker with your 5-day New England Broadcasting forecast. Looks like it's going to be snow, followed by snow until roughly later when the snow will give way to a bit of snow. That goes through the night and brings us into a short stretch of more motherfucking snow and scattered patches of depressing, soul-crushing snow. Look for the snow to change over to, please, Lord Jesus, make it stop snowing snow in some pretty deep accumulations. How deep? Well, we're looking at anywhere from I can't find my car to Mary, we should eat the children first. But don't worry, right after that, Mother Nature is going to wind up and fuck us right in the ass with more cocksucking snow. By then, with any luck, we'll all be dead, buried under the weighty masses of the next ice age and preserved like fucking Neanderthals and mammoths. That's your 5-day forecast. Now back to the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thanks, Jim. Jim will update us a little bit later in the program with the 5-day forecast. It might as well just be the rest of your life forecast because it really doesn't matter anymore. By the way, Jim Clambaker is one of the most experienced meteorologists I have ever worked with. He is just, he's phenomenal at what he does. I don't know how he does it, but he's crazy. Jim Clambaker, good man. Hey, there's just so many aspects to all this snow going on. All the school systems in the New England area are suffering from the fact that the school has been closed every other day, practically. And the governor of Massachusetts, Charlie Baker, you know this guy? He's been governor for like a month and a half, and he's already getting fucked. He doesn't really get angry. There's a little smirk on his face. Maybe it was from an auto accident or something, but his lip is kind of like goes up in one corner. And it, like, even if he's like doing a eulogy at a funeral, he looks like he's almost enjoying it. I don't know what it is about this guy, but I'm sure that's just a facial tic of some sort. But Charlie Baker, man, he's the new governor of Massachusetts, and he just as soon as he started running as governor, man, as soon as he took off, it's just like just suck is happening around him, and you know, he's the new face of suck. I mean, I'm very sorry, he's doing the best he can, but all he can do is just stand there and go, "I'm disappointed. This is unacceptable." Yeah. You know what? You're unacceptable. Do some leadership, man. You were everybody in your party, your Republican Party, always criticizes Obama for not leading. Just lead, man. Just say, "I'm sick of it, and here's what I'm doing." Not just, "Well, I have to talk to the MBTA. I have no control over them." Screw you. You have control over everything. You're the governor of the whole state of Massachusetts. They warned us about you, Charlie. They really did.
I am Tiffany Mack, co-chair of MassIEPAC, and MassIEPAC approves and paid for this message.
In Charlie Baker's Massachusetts, who loses? We do. As CEO Charlie Baker laid off workers in Massachusetts and outsourced jobs that went to India. Baker even accepted the Outsourcing Excellence Award for a deal that shipped jobs overseas, while tripling his own salary to $1.7 million a year. If Charlie Baker wins, the rest of us lose.
Oh, fuck. Oh, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's a shame. I kind of like Charlie Baker in a way, but let's see you put your foot down, babe. Let's see you do something, man, because it is unacceptable. Today, the transit system of the city of Boston has been purposely shut down because of the 17,000 inches of snow we've received within the past 10 minutes. And the third rail, which is, by the way, very old train technology, the third rail, which delivers the power to the train, is covered with ice and snow, and trains break down and they can't function. Half of the fleet is well over 25 years old. A good percentage of that is, like, dead. Here's a thing that Boston doesn't quite understand. It's a wonderful, beautiful city. In theory, it's fantastic. It's charming and all that kind of crap. But as far as being a feasible infrastructure, it about sucks as much as suck can get. The train system reminds me of the 1800 trolley cars that were never replaced. There's a Green Line train. For those that don't live in the area, there's a Green Line train that resembles the Rice-A-Roni trolley in San Francisco, only it's uglier and doesn't run as well. That thing in San Francisco, of course, where there's no snow, I understand that, goes up hills and stuff. This thing doesn't go like 3 inches without hitting a rock and the whole thing breaks down. It's an old, old train system. Here's my question to the city of Boston and state of Massachusetts. Why don't you have new trains? Every other system updates their trains continually, and you're always getting new trains in, and then you replace the old, broken-down, old technology trains with the new ones. Boston, no. You never replace shit, man. I mean, if a button breaks on a transit worker's uniform, you just use Scotch tape, man. You don't even sew that back on. You do nothing. You do maintenance on things that don't work. Ever. You fix them and they break down again. You fix them and they break down again. Buy some freaking trains. Now, I know it's like more expensive than going to like Home Depot and buying a train. I don't even know if they sell them there. I assume they do. You order them in and you pick them up at the store. I don't know how that works. I think trains are rather expensive. But what's the price tag of extending the commuter line from Boston down to Fall River? By the way, if you live in Fall River, raise your hand if you live in Boston. If you work in Boston, you live in Fall River, and you're trying to get into Boston to commute on a commuter line from Fall River to Boston, raise your hand. Oh, look, fucking nobody. Excuse my language today, by the way, but I told you to get the kids out of the room. It's going to be that kind of show. But they want to pour $1 billion into that project. Take your little billions and buy some new trains for the very basis of your commuter infrastructure. Because guess what? Your businesses are failing if customers don't come into Boston. And I'll tell you something. I live on the South Shore of Massachusetts. I talk to people. Oh, I talk to them. And they don't go into Boston because it's too much of a headache. It takes them over an hour to get in on a weekend on the one expressway road that they can take. And it's a pain in the ass. And there's no commuter lines running on weekends through most systems. And if there is a commuter line running into Boston on the weekend, and you happen to work on the weekend, or you want to go see a play or do something and go into Boston, take advantage of wonderful Boston, then the trains run every like 6 hours or something. And then you can't get out of Boston if it's past like 10 o'clock at night, if you're lucky that your line is even up at that time of night. So you're stranded in Boston. It is a piss poor, second class, third class city. We talk about third world countries where there's flies buzzing around the children's faces. You got a third world city here, babe. You're letting it go to pot, and you're saying, well, this is the tradition of our city. It's charming and it's wonderful. It's not charming anymore, and it's not wonderful anymore. It's going downhill, babe. And here's the funny part of all of this. The city of Boston wants to host the Olympics in 2026, whatever it is. I don't even know. Probably won't be alive. My God, why? What are you talking about, man? You can't even get your customers to go into Boston. You can't even have a regular commuting infrastructure, much less take on the onslaught of an Olympic situation. It makes me laugh. And I think that the Olympic Committee is going to have quite a difficult road now because of this. Granted, it's for the Summer Olympics and not the Winter Olympics. That would be like too much of a joke to take. But just the same, even in the summer, it's tough to get around in this wonderful, charming city. I love Boston. I think it's the nicest city in the world. People, not so much. City, yeah, very, very nice. But they've got this attitude where, man, we don't replace things. We just fix them. They did this tunnel thing in Boston, which was a cost overrun that we'll be paying for until we die, and there's still freaking traffic. It kind of freed up traffic for maybe about a year, and now it's all like jammed up again. You know, I think you have to find some smart people to do this stuff. So much for the, there's no transit system today at all. So people, if they have to work in Boston, good luck. Just good luck to you. And it's terrible. Of course, all of this is caused by Mother Nature. And there are a lot of good-natured people walking around. I watch the news reports and they interview the good-natured people. And they say, you're stranded. You've been standing out in the cold for like 4 hours. A train broke down in Braintree on the Red Line, in Quincy, I should say. And people sat on a train for up to 3 hours. And then the fire department had to escort them off the train in the snow and walk them along the tracks to buses. And then the buses took off like a considerable time after that. So people are like, their commute was like 5 hours long in the cold and all that kind of crap. Why did you keep these people on the train for 2 hours? Why don't you just escort them off the train immediately with the firefighters and the police? I mean, why are you so stupid? And apparently the people who were in the train, who were stranded in the train, were saying nobody told us anything. They told us stuff, but it wasn't right. And they told us something, and then for an hour we didn't hear from anybody. We have no idea what's going on. I would have taken a cop and a firefighter or a few cops and got them to that train immediately and had them on the train because they got the cop radios, and keep them updated and do a visible display of the authorities on the train comforting people. Instead, people on the train, I don't know what the hell's going on. We're just standing here for 2 hours. It's the height of inefficiency, and it's so simple just to think things through and to get people help and information. It's just deplorable and it's disgusting. And Charlie Baker, as governor, stands there and says, I'm very disappointed. We can't have this happen again. What are you saying to me? you're just expressing your frustration and your disappointment, but you're not solving anything, man. Solve something. Come out with a statement like, okay, we decide we're going to spend $1 billion on replacing the entire system. And within 2-3 years, we're going to have the new trains online. And we put them on order, and they're going to rush them here by Federal Express or something. And that's what it was. And then if things happen and you had another few bad winters, you'd say, okay, but the guy took care of it. He's buying new trains, man. He understands the problem, and he's saying, enough of this crap. I'm buying trains. Yeah, no one's going to argue with that. No one's going to say, oh, my goodness, the fares are going up because of new trains. No, they are going to say, hey, we need new trains. Thank you for getting new trains. But instead, the governor stands there and he goes, this is unacceptable. You know, see, you're unacceptable. You took the job as governor. You're responsible. Now, I know that you didn't make it snow. You're not Mother Nature. But you can't go around. People can't go around saying, well, this is New England and it's snowing. They're doing the best they can. Yeah, but at the same time, you're paying taxes, and don't just take it like that. Those are weird people who say, well, what are you going to do? The house fell on my head. I got a concussion. Oh, what are you going to do? Well, that's your five-day forecast. Okay. All right. So we're going to do one of the most popular segments we do on the show, which doesn't really say very much for the show. Here we go.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
You know what? I don't give a crap. I don't care.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
You're listening to Ron Van Dam on Metro South Podcasting. Oi, he's such a mensch. I mean, a nice mensch, don't get me wrong, but still, really, a mensch.
So I understand from the meteorologists that we're in a very weird air current pattern where every single air pattern coming from the south, coming from the west, the air currents shoot it right up to New England. We are we're shot up. That's what's happening. Everything that happens goes to New England. When a guy blows his nose in Afghanistan, the air currents, somebody sneezes in Connecticut. I'm telling you, it's amazing. And I don't know how to break this pattern. Can we, do something about it? Can we, get some big blowers and just blow the wind pattern somewhere else? Someplace where it doesn't matter? Like South Dakota? Who cares there, right? South Dakota, man. I don't even know anybody who lives in... I think South Dakota, is it still on the map? Did you check lately? I think they kind of took it off there and put in a Starbucks. I don't know what's in South Dakota. I don't even know any towns or cities. I probably would if you mentioned one, but I don't want to hear it. I'm just dumping on South Dakota, and so should the snow. Seriously, man. You know, places like Wyoming, almost no snow this year at all. I mean, something's a little amiss here. I'm really sick of winter. And the only point of winter is to ski or have some hot chocolate. Other than that, it's of no purpose whatsoever. And I am longing for a climate where I wouldn't have to deal with snow. I wouldn't have to pick up a shovel ever again. I'm kind of thinking about it, you know. I really am. Even though I know I will never move because... But you're making it rough for me, man. You're making it rough for me. kind of like being married five times, and like every single time your current wife says, I'm leaving you, and you go, oh, no, but please don't leave me, can we work this out? No, I'm leaving you, because you're an asshole, I'm just leaving you. And the second marriage, I'm leaving you, well, can we work it out? No. The third marriage, I'm leaving you, I can't stand you anymore. Can we work this out? Can we go to couples therapy or something? Please don't leave me, it'll be like my third marriage, it has failed. No, I'm leaving you, goodbye, I can't stand you. Fourth marriage, I'm leaving you. No, please don't leave me, can we work it out? No, I don't. Fifth marriage, I'm leaving you. Go on, what the fuck? Well, that's how I feel about snow. There's going to be a snowstorm. Oh my God, I got to get some water, I got to get some bread, I got to put the water on the bread, I got to get some shovels, I got to get some sand, I got to get some salt, and pepper and something, all this stuff, and it snows, and oh, I'm shoveling, oh, it's horrible, and horrible, and then another snow is coming, another storm, oh my god, what am I gonna do? Okay, I gotta get more bread, and I gotta get some eggs. Now I'm out of eggs because I ate them all during another storm. I gotta get some eggs, and I gotta get some kerosene lamps, and I gotta get some batteries, oh my god, batteries, C, D, double A, triple A, triple A, triple A, triple A. I gotta everything, I gotta water, batteries, and I have to get candles and matches of candles, and I gotta get more food and more bread. Oh my God, more bread again. And it snows. Oh my God. I'm shoveling. Oh, guess what? There's another storm. Oh, I got another snowstorm. Oh my gosh, I have to go. I gotta get more snow. I gotta get some sand for the driveway and some kitty litter for the cat. I gotta get the dog food. And I gotta get more bread. And I gotta get more bread. I'm out of eggs again. Oh my God. I'm gonna have water just in case I don't get any water. I gotta get some water. And it snows. And you're shoveling again. And the forecast comes in. Here comes another snowstorm. And you say, eh, what the fuck? I don't care anymore. Let it snow. What am I going to do? I'll die in the house, whatever. The only thing worse than all of this for people in New England, and some of them actually had this problem, would be another blizzard or heavy wet snow that causes power outages. That would be it. When the power came back on, I would pack my suitcase and I'd book a flight and I'd say, I'm not coming back. I mean, you can have everything left. Call an estate planner or something. Just take everything I have. I'm done. I'm finished. I'm done. Now, in Boston, they have the problem. Here's a big problem. Where do I put all the snow? This is what they're saying. Where do I put all the snow? And I'm saying, well, Governor, bend over. That's not his fault. It's Mother Nature's fault. We have to blame an entity that doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? It's phenomenal, man. You know, oh, things are horrible. They're really terrible. It just doesn't stop snowing. Well, that's Mother Nature. Oh, man, where are you getting your fairy tales from? It's not Mother Nature. It's the Earth. It's the air currents. There's no freaking mother in the sky dumping snow on you, man. That doesn't work like that. Well, it's Mother Nature. What are you going to do? You're going to shut up. That's what you're going to do. Is this global warming? Is it climate change? I don't care. So what do we do with the snow? So I'm saying have a contest, and the winner gets $1 million, because, you know, we got plenty of that stuff. Winner gets $1 million, and you have to come up with some type of incredible technology that will stop it from snowing so much, or lessen the effects of the snow on civilization in New England. And that would be $1 million. And also, as part of it, for an extra $500,000, where do I put the snow? Places to put the snow. I don't know. Renting a condo for the snow is way too expensive. I believe they're going to start dumping the snow into the ocean and just say, oh, screw the environment for now, because we have to do something with the snow. I think they're just going to dump it in the ocean at a point. And, of course, because of all the snow being dumped in the ocean in the Boston area, the water will rise and flood everything, and that'll work. I don't know what to do with the snow. I have no idea. They have snow farms where I guess they grow snow. I mean, hey, shut them down, man, because we're growing our own snow here naturally. It's funny, the ski resorts. I love the ski resorts because they are so opposite me. They say, oh, we're all excited. We got like 2 feet of fresh snow. And I'm thinking, all right, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to swap here. You're going to come down and live here where we get all the snow. And you're going to like live in my house for the whole winter. You have it plowed and you have it taken care of. And what I'm going to do is go somewhere else. And then when I come back, you will have taken care of my house and everything because you love fresh powdered snow. You can just like do a ski jump off my roof and enjoy yourself if you love snow so much. Go on. You can masturbate in a snowbank for all I care if you are so, so happy about being buried in snow. Where do I put the snow? You know, look, it's Mother Nature. Don't complain. It's Mother Nature. She's just a little bitchy this month. And she's just, you know what I'm saying? It's okay. We usually don't, and that's the other thing. We usually don't get this much snow. People will say, you know, this is an odd year. It's odd. We usually don't get this much snow. And my answer is, well, now that you know that we can, aren't you a little concerned that it can happen again? No, we usually don't get this much snow. And now, watch next year. It'll be like twice as much snow. And you go, oh, man, I can't believe this. This is Mother Nature. Oh, you. Mother Nature. Oh, you. Oh, man. I assume that someday, soon, within a few months, hopefully, I'll be sitting outside. It'll be springtime. The birds will be chirping. The snow won't have melted away. How long is it going to take to melt this shit, by the way? Is it going to be in August and I'm still going to see little patches of ice along the perimeter of my yard? I believe that'll be the case. I've got mounds on my property that are at least 8 feet tall. If they toppled over, I'd be buried alive. So perhaps that's not... Oh, Mother Nature, you. Oh, that Mother Nature. I'm going to have to talk to her. Oh, Mother Nature, you crazy woman, you batty little chick. That's just ridiculous, man. All right, let's turn the corner here. Oh, there's other stuff I wanted to talk about, too. How much time do I have here? Hold on. I got a little bit of time. I want to talk about the school day situation. And I'm serious about this, and I'll probably be talking about it again. I talked about it a few days ago, but not in this vein. The tightest asses in the world are the ones that run school departments. Now, if you work in a school department, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the high up smart tight asses who have this rule, and I think it's countrywide pretty much, but in Massachusetts, you have to have 180 days of school. It's scheduled for 185. You have to do at least 180, and if not, you have to start making it up. Well, there's teacher contracts, which are not that easy to come by anyway, and they have to stop by a certain date. By the end of June, school has to be over, whether you've done your 180 days or not, and it becomes a problem. But there is this rigid rule in Massachusetts, and this is what just eats away at my liver and other organs. There's this rule that you have to have 180 days of school in a school year. And I'm saying to myself, you people yourselves have been saying that this is an unusual year. This is a freak year. And why don't you skin tight assholes, why don't you just say, this is a fucked up year. Forget the 180 day thing. Not for this year. What the hell? Just we'll do as many as we can. Let the kids out the third week of June and call it a day, man. Do you honestly believe that if a kid has 175 days of school as opposed to 180, that the kid's going to be walking the streets going, "Duh, what's that, a tree? How do you spell tree? Is it T-R-E? Oh, duh. Do you seriously believe that 5 days of school is going to dumbfound a kid's education? Give me a freaking break. You know that that's absurd. Well, Ron, we have our rules, and we have to stick by our rules. Who made the rules? You did. You made the rules. You can change the rules. Not forever. Just for this year, man. Why are you punishing those poor little children? Why are you making them go to school through the... Why are you punishing the teachers, man? The children didn't do this. The teachers didn't do it. It was Mother Nature did this. Oh, you crazy Mother Nature, you did this to us. Why are you punishing the kids? Because going to school through the end of June is punishment. It's not a happy thing. Ask any kid. Hey, you're going to have to go to school through the end of June up to the 1st of July. Oh, boy, I hope I can go through most of July. I love school. Are you serious, man? Nobody wants to be in school past the second week of June, the third week of June at the most. Are you freaking kidding me? You can't say this has been an outrageous situation. We're going to turn our backs. Maybe we'll start the school year a couple of days early next year, like just a little bit before Labor Day, but... You don't have to do 180 days because that's like just dumb. Why can't they just do that? Who is going to say, oh, you can't, oh, no, 5 days, oh, you're going to excuse 5-7 days of school? Oh, you're going to ruin, these kids are going to be poor and indigent. As a result, they won't learn anything. They're going to drool from their lips all over their clothes with the idiocy of their lives because... The 7 days of school will never be made up again in their entire lifetime. And, oh my God. You know what? You people are weird. You have rulers that haven't even been constructed yet that don't fit up your tight ass. Here's what Ron Van Dam, and that's my name, is saying to all of the high administrators in school systems, to the governor, the head of education in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Stop being such a freaking idiot. Forgive the school days. No one's going to argue with you. No kid is going to be stupid as a result of it. Give him a little extra homework or something. Make him read a book. Tell him, all right, you know... When there's a snow day, you have to read like 3 chapters of this book, okay? You know what, kids? Go out, have a good time. Shovel some driveways. How about that? How about that for brain exercise? All right? How about that? How about it's a snow day, you have to go out with a shovel and shovel some driveways of elderly people who, if they try to shovel a driveway, will drop dead. How about that? How about doing something like that? That's an education. That's a forgiveness thing. That's learning a very valuable social lesson. Because I'm telling you something, a day that a kid spends in school, not every one of them is gold. Not every day in school is so freaking precious. So get off your high horse, administrators, and let's start talking about just saying this has been a weird, wacky winter. Forgive them. Forgive them, for they have not sinned. We shall not punish our children nor our teachers under these circumstances. Oh, you Mother Nature, you did this to us. I hope someone's listening to this who has some clout in the school system. And then if you forgive the 5 or 7 days, the winter's not even over yet, and I think it's like more than 5 days of no school, then I want you to call this the Ron Van Dam Clause. That wonderful saint, that intelligent man of reason, Ron Van Dam, suggested that we forgive school days in extreme snow emergency situations. And we will name a wing of our school after Ron Van Dam in every school system in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to thank him for his concern. And finally, a man like Ron Van Dam stepping up with some intelligence and some cut-through-the-bullshit kind of technology. Thank you, Mr. Van Dam, for setting us straight. Why, we were so asshole-tight that we weren't really seeing life as it was. We were punishing the wrong people when we should be punishing, oh, that Mother Nature, oh, you, oh. And if I ever hear the excuse again, it's New England, this is what happens, then you surely must be put in a perilous situation. because we're going to divide the people that say, oh, it's New England, you know. We're going to divide them from the other people who say, you know, it doesn't have to be like this. We don't live here in order just to throw up our hands and say, whoa, what are you going to do? You can do stuff. First of all, I'm going to write Mother Nature a very angry letter because she's getting away with a lot of stuff here, man. Dump your snow in other places. Can't you even out the dumping? Can't you dump a little bit of snow in New York, a little bit of snow maybe in Maryland, hasn't had any for quite some time? How about the foothills of Virginia? Chicago had a couple of storms, but nothing like what we're having. Let's spread it out, man. If you live in the Northeast or in Midwest, upper Midwest, let's spread out the snow. Let's not just dump it on a few towns in New England, because that's just not fair. That's not democratic. I'm serious about the school day thing. You bastards in Massachusetts, you authoritative little bastards, you better just make an announcement and say, look, this is an extreme situation. We're dropping the school, the 180-day rule for this year, but just for this year, because this was an extreme situation. If you don't say that, I'm never talking to you again, school administrators of great importance. Who think they have great importance, but they don't. All right, that's enough. Hey, tomorrow on the program, Tori Wainwright is going to join us. It'll be Tori Wednesday this week. Always interesting conversation. You think I got opinions? Check out Tori. Yeah, the two of us together are like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So join us tomorrow at the same time, whenever you happen to listen to this particular program. All right, I'm going to take the focus off of me for now and my incessant talking, although I know that you agree with everything that I'm saying because I am so totally right on a lot of things, which makes me very, very annoying. It's time to talk about cars. Yay, I think. Let me see if we have time for this even today. Yeah, I guess we do. Kelley Blue Book is the Bible of cars, and they've done a survey about which cars retain the most value. For when you go out and you buy a car, you want a car that's going to have value when you want to get rid of it, or whatever the case may be, or when it dies, you know, you use it to trade in. So let's speak to Kelley Blue Book. Shall we do that? Kelley. I'm talking to Jack Nerad, Executive Editorial Director and Executive Market Analyst for Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Sounds like a Russian submersive organization, but it's not. Yeah, first time you heard that? No, probably not.
It is, actually. That's a good one. I like it.
Cool. Thank you very much. I like to be original. Kelley Blue Book, it's the Bible of cars. Hello. I mean, how long has Kelley Blue Book been around?
Almost 90 years. We've been around since 1926, so I guess that's 89 years.
So since cars began.
Yeah. Practically, yeah.
Okay, so.
Well, we've gained quite a reputation, we think, over time of, you know, helping people find good values. And really, that's what our Best Resale Value Awards are about, is helping people understand that resale value is important. Because it's an expression of less depreciation. And of course, the least depreciation you can get, the better off you are. It just means you're less money out of pocket totally for transportation. And we name vehicles in a bunch of different categories in the top 10 list and a regular brand and a luxury brand, all to help people identify good potential vehicles to buy.
Because most of us, I'm making up a number, I'm going to say 80% of us use our vehicles as a trade-in.
Yeah, a lot of people will trade in their vehicles, and understanding or the trade-in value or what that potential trade-in value will be is important. I mean, when a lot of people get to the time when they're thinking they're going to trade in their current vehicle for something else, and they go on to our site and you know, I think, sadly, a lot of times they're a little disappointed in what the value of their vehicle, current vehicle, is.
Sure.
So helping people pick out vehicles, they're going to retain that value a little better is a big help to them.
You know, before we get into this, I always have a tremendous problem every time I own a car and it gets, you know, to the end, like around 100,000 miles or something. I never know when that line is that you say, I'm going to get rid of the car now so I can get the best value for it, as opposed to it's still running well, I will continue to drive it. I don't know where that cutoff is.
Yeah, and it's getting harder and harder. It used to be that when you got up over 50, 60,000 yeah. miles, you yeah. really started to think, hey, I better unload this thing yeah. or I'm going to have to ride this right into the barn.
Exactly.
But these days, cars run like a top at well over 100,000 miles.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, we hear a lot of cars are out there 200,000 miles.
Wow.
My long-suffering wife is driving a car with, you know, some 98,000 miles on it right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, new cars are so expensive that a lot of people are hanging on to their cars longer. So that just means that when you buy a new car, you know, even more is riding on it. So pay more attention to what you're doing and do more research.
Yeah. Now, every year you rate the new cars that are coming out, the 2015s. Because when you're looking for a car, in the back of your mind, you're going, which one's going to not only last me forever, but give me the most value at trade-in, which is kind of like the same answer, actually.
Very similar. Yeah, absolutely.
How do you know ahead of time what's going to be popular and what's going to work like 6-10 years down the line?
Well, we have some 30 or 40 years of doing this, so we've been doing it a long time. It's critical that we get it right. I mean, the car leasing industry relies on this kind of information. They have to have a very good idea of what that vehicle is going to be worth at the end of its lease period, because they're on the hook for that. And you know, if they're way wrong, there's been instances, happily not Kelley Blue Book instances, where that has been wrong, and it has cost those leasing companies millions of dollars. So, you know, a lot is riding on this. We have a lot of experience in doing this. The good news on that score, too, is experience helps, number one. But also that these things, they don't fluctuate wildly. It's not like one brand has great resale value or one model has great resale value this year, and then it totally shifts over to another brand next year. The top brands have a tendency to be the cream and always be at the top, and the others, not so much.
Yeah.
So it's more predictable than you might guess from the outside.
Okay. So is there a list of those cars, or do we?
There is. Okay. In fact, we name winners in 22 categories. Mm-hmm. That's very useful because people are shopping in a particular category.
True.
We name a top 10 list. That is really dominated by trucks this year. The GMC Canyon is on that list, the GMC Sierra, Chevrolet Colorado, Chevrolet Silverado, Ford F-150,
mm-hmm.
Honda CR-V is on the list, Jeep Wrangler, Toyota Tacoma, Tundra, and 4Runner are all on the list. So you can tell that's a heavily SUV truck-oriented list.
Yeah.
And then there, as I say, there are the brand winners. Lexus is our luxury brand winner.
Uh-huh.
Subaru is the winner, a non-luxury brand.
Mm-hmm.
And then models in individual categories.
Oh, so everybody can maybe win some category. It's very, very
Yeah, sad. I mean, it doesn't quite work out that way. But, you know, there's a lot of category winners. And because people shop in different categories, and that's important to them to know what's retaining its value best in a particular category.
Jack, I have never seen so many SUVs on the road in my entire life, and I guess that is the big thing now. I mean, I'm almost seeing more SUVs than I am sedans.
Absolutely. In fact, you're noticing something that is absolutely spot on what's happened in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And it's really SUVs and what the industry calls crossovers. I don't think the general public really knows what a crossover is, but it's largely kind of looks like an SUV, but it's based on a car chassis.
Yeah.
So that's kind of inside baseball on that.
I think that's what I'm referring to. Yeah. I mean, those are the ones
that's what you're seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, a vehicle like the Honda CR-V, for example, or, the Chevy Equinox, or any one of the Lexus RX. All of those are crossovers. They look like SUVs. They essentially are SUVs, depending on how you define it. And those are more popular now than sedans. That has taken over from sedans.
Yeah.
And so you see the midsize SUV and the compact SUV in particular,
right,
is the most popular segment out there right now.
Wow. And you know, you would think that people would go to sedans to save on gas mileage. I assume the crossovers and SUVs are a little bit more hefty on the gas. I don't know.
Maybe a little bit. What you're seeing, though, is somebody will shift out of, say, a midsize sedan into a compact SUV.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Because they get the same kind of interior space plus more versatility.
Okay.
So they might go out of, say, a Honda Accord into a Honda CR-V. You know, you get a more upright driving position. You get more versatile interior space,
crazy,
those kind of things. But you're actually driving a car that's essentially based on the Civic instead of the Accord.
Yeah.
So you might get some fuel economy advantages there. And that's true across all product lines.
In the commercials, Toyota always says we have more cars on the road since the horseless carriage than anybody else. Is that is that absolutely true or not necessarily?
I'm not sure that they have more cars on the road because, you know, the domestics still have a lead in market share.
Yeah.
But they are cars with great longevity and reliability. They have the reputation for that. That's why they score so well in resale value and why, you know, several Toyotas are on our top 10 list, for example.
Well, I could talk to you all morning, but I'm not supposed to. And but Kelley Blue Book is got it all. I mean, they even you probably go into courtrooms and actually state the values of things. I mean, they are just the Bible. As a matter of fact, when I go to a hotel room, I pull out the Kelley Blue Book from the dresser and I read. It's not true.
Yeah.
Someday. How can we get more information and find out the best value for what we have and what we do have value wise?
Yeah, I mean, the real good news is all our information is available at KBB.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's all free. It's all accessible to the consumer.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can go to KBB.com. We review every vehicle every year. We do an expert review. I have a great editorial staff of 10 people who are scouring the globe, you know, driving cars and reporting on them. A lot of consumer reviews. So just a lot of information for people who are about to buy a new vehicle.
There you have it, Kelley Blue Book. I mean, you really should have one, and now with, you know, with the online thing, everybody can. So, Jack, always a pleasure to speak to you. Hopefully we can do it again and keep us updated.
I look forward to it. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you so much, Kelley Blue Book. Thank you. Thank you, Kelley. Mr. Blue Book. Mr. Blue Balls, Mr. Kelley Blue Balls. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you snow. Oh, my God. I mean, I wish you peace. Oh, my God. Oh, you Mother Nature, you. Oh, you crazy woman.